Well, welcome to Cattlemen's College again. I'm Robin Faulkner. I'm a stocker and feeder calf veterinarian that works for Pfizer Animal Health. And it's kind of a little surprise when he asked me to speak at this, because I typically work on the other side of the business, is I'm working with the guys that buy a feeder calf. And when I came in here to talk about preconditioning today, the first thing you usually want to do is come in here and talk about programs or what do we do or this sort of thing. And that's not the perspective I thought I could give you the best. All right, I'm on mic up. That's not how I thought I could give you my best perspective today. There's plenty of places where you can go to find a good program. Your local veterinarian, extension service, whoever's marketing your cattle for you, be it a sale barn or if you're marketing them directly. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to answer this question right here. Where does the buyer of your calf perceive value? Next slide. So I found this little sign on the wall at a little background in operation in Arkansas, and I thought it said a whole lot. And I may not can read it from here, but it says basically horseshoe and $40, except for paints and apps and two-year-olds and customers that pet their horses. All right? So what this horseshoer had determined is that a horse is not a horse. And what we are fast determining in the feeder cattle business is that a feeder calf is not a feeder calf. And every calf, or almost every calf, at some point in his life is going to go through a situation just like this here. This is a small backgrounding yard in Kentucky where they buy calves at the sale barn and bring in and basically precondition them there, because whoever produced that calf didn't do anything to him before he brought him to town. And they buy these calves at what they consider a good discount, and they do a good job of buying, and they really don't care whether you precondition or not. Why? Because they spent a lot of time learning what calves to buy that they could buy for less than they were worth. And they spent a lot of time learning how to handle the health on those animals where they can increase the profitability of their operation. Okay? There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But you can do this at home, we can do it in a background in yard, or we can do it in a feed yard. So how are you going to determine the value of the calves you sell? How are you going to determine that? Or how do you determine how you increase the value of them? You don't. The value of what you sell is determined by who buys it, not by you. This has nothing to do about it being a commodity business. And a lot of times we have the dogma inside our souls that says, well, those stocker calf guys and those order buyers and those feedlots are all gamblers. They're not gamblers, they're investors. So what you really got to think about is, how do I sell my calf, or how do I position my calf, or what do I need to do to my calf to make it more attractive to the investor that's going to buy it? Next slide. So what qualities or things that you could put into a calf are attractive to an investor? What's attractive to an investor? Well, he wants to make money, obviously. But there's other things that may be even more important to the investor you're trying to sell to. Because what type of issues might he be facing in his operation? He's got to buy a lot of cattle. He's got to fill pens. A lot of his crew has quit working for him, and now they're welding pipe in oil fields. And so he's having a hard time getting the labor he needs to handle the type cattle that have health problems. So he's got all these things facing him and a whole lot of uncertainty in most of the cattle that are available to him. You know, the 25 million or so feeder calves we produce in this country, how many of them does the buyer know much about? How many of them? Very few. I'd say 10%. Despite all the progress we've made with programs like SelectVac and CPH in Kentucky, am I not working? I don't like being filmed anyway. Go to the next slide. What the buyer really wants, what this investor really wants, is consistency and predictability. And I'm fully convinced if there's unpredictability in there, he's got averages. And he'll say, on average, those calves are going to perform here. So I'm going to be it here and kind of split the difference. But if he is doggone certain that these animals are going to perform right here, he will give you every bit of the premium. Because it's worth that much to him and his entire operation to have that consistency and predictability, particularly with where we're going now with this corn market. Go ahead. But let's don't lose focus. You're going to have people talk to you about increasing carcass quality, and you need to pre-wean, and you need to do all these things. But there's two things that separate the successful and the foreclosed in the cow-calf business. They are the major drivers of profitability in your cow-calf operation in anybody's data set, and that is managing input cost and keeping reproductive efficiency. So producing a calf that grades a certain way, or producing a calf that produces a certain carcass, or all of these things that we talk about, if the heifers that you keep won't breed and won't get by with a little less input dollars than the ones you had before, you're probably not going to increase your profitability. The sad thing about this, along with respiratory disease, is this is something that as an industry we hadn't really improved in the last 30 years. We're still clicking along at about that 80% calving rate. And for all the things you could do increasing weaning weight or trying to get a premium at a feeder calf sale, none of them are going to do as much for you as taking more calves to the sale and spending less money getting them there. Going to the next. So ask a feedlot manager. This is the guy you're trying to sell your calves to. Show me the cattle you're feeding yourself. He took me down to this pen right here. This is my old gambler, isn't it? All right, go to the next slide. So this is what these calves look like. I apologize for the picture. Any of you produce these calves here? Does anybody want to claim them? Some of you people from Lower Alabama or something? No, does anybody know where these calves are from? There's some great cattle in Lower Alabama, by the way.
You can keep going. Just reposition.
Go on to the next slide. This is a brand on their hip. These are feeder cattle from Mexico. All right? So why is this feeder, and this is not Texas, this is eastern Nebraska. So why is this commercial feeder got feeder calf from Mexico that looks like some kind of Jersey, brown, Swiss, Guernsey cross? It's cheap, wasn't it? Go to the next slide. No, they weren't cheap. He's paying more for these cattle than he's paying for Montana, Nebraska cattle on a pound basis. The reason he likes them is because they're absolutely consistent and predictable. When he puts them in that feedlot, he knows what they're going to do. He knows how they're going to convert on feed. He knows what the cost of gain is going to be, and he knows the day he's going to sell them. They're that consistent. They're profitable for him because he can do that. They have high health. He has very little health problems on these cattle, and that's what makes them. That's one of the things that makes them consistent. All of the health problems happened in Mexico before they crossed the border when they were quarantined down there. And they're some of the most efficient cattle that he fed in that feed yard as far as feed conversion. Their gains weren't high. Now, I want you all to listen to this, some of you that are breeding cows out there. The gains aren't that impressive on these cattle. They gain 2.5, 2.6 a day. But their feed conversion beats most of what's in the yard. And now corn just got higher. How important is average daily gain? Okay? They grade high quality of choice. They're not perfect cattle. I don't particularly like the cattle, but that's how he made his decisions. Something that was consistent, predictable, profitable. That profitability was tied to good efficiency in the cattle. And they may not be his preferred cattle today because something's changed. Mainly it's winter time, and I wouldn't want to put these cattle in eastern Nebraska in the winter. So, I mean, that's one thing we're always looking at. What I'd be willing to pay for these in the spring of the year versus December is different if I'm in Nebraska and got to feed them. Go to the next slide. A premium feeder calf in one market, one place in time, or in this group may be a complete dud in another. I believe that all calves are above average. That doesn't make sense, does it? But if you put them with other calves just like them, we can do above average things with them. But if you produce a perfect natural limousine, large lean, premium calf, and you take him to the special feeder calf sale and he goes in with the black CAB qualified cattle, is he a premium calf anymore? He's a dud. Not because that's a bad program or what he can do, but simply because he's not going to feed and do right in that pen of Angus cattle, and he's not going to be marketed in a way that allows you to capture that premium. So when we've got these admixtures of different premium cattle is what we've got. We can take just about anything and make it fit a niche or a market. But we can't take just an admixture of everything and do it. So to get a premium, this is my pitch to my marketing guys in here. You got to prepare a calf for a market. You got to market that to somebody, and you got to market it with a group of animals that he'll fit with that share his qualities. Because there is no premium for a single calf, no matter how good he is. Okay, he doesn't fit our systems. Our systems revolve around truckloads. And often pen sizes, it might hold two or three truckloads. So producing half a dozen of these or even 100 of these may not always get you your full premium. You may have to combine with somebody else. And that's the reason that we enjoy so much at Pfizer, working not only with the universities, but with our marketing partners, our regional sale barns, local sale barns, order buyers, all these people that help make these value chains come together. Go to the next slide. You ask the feedlots, what's most important to you? Most important things on that list, these are all things they think are extremely or very important. Weaning for 4 weeks, castration dehorning prior to shipping, respiratory vaccine before weaning, another one at weaning, a booster. We're not always getting it done. Now, if you do all these things to your calves and just drop them at the sale barn and don't tell anybody, you're going to get a premium? No, you're going to get paid on averages. So no matter if you do these things, you still got to market your cattle in a way to be able to transmit that information to the next guy. Next slide, please. Same list, different source of information. This is actually from the old NCA, which is NCBA now. But I want you to notice that one on the top, that weaned. Weaning is something, I mean, you don't send your kids to college to wean them. It's a difficult time. It's not something I think we want to be doing on the road or in a truck or in a sale barn pen. Go to the next slide. Now, the challenges facing our industry, and I don't think these get better, is that most of our cattle are in small herds. All right? I think if you look at my slide right there, less than 15% of our calf numbers are represented in herds 500 head and up. And to be realistic to you, to start selling load size lots or pen size lots, we're having to get in those herds. So our real challenge, and it's been our challenge the whole time and it will be going forward, is how do we get together as an industry to put these calves together, present them to the market in a way where that whatever value they have can be captured. Next slide. And those cows aren't all in east or western Nebraska and west Texas. Each of those dots represents 5,000 cows. And you'll see that our cows are spread all over this country. And where you're sitting right here in Nashville, Tennessee, you could drive 50 miles in either direction, you'd say there is no cows here. Look at the map. Cows are as dense from here and up through middle Kentucky as they are anywhere in the country. So we've got cows everywhere. Next slide. We've got to get them to a few places to feed them. This is shifting somewhat because the ethanol plants a little north. I noticed in Cattle Facts they say we moved 2% of cattle north. Go ahead to the next one. Here's another that's an issue for our industry, but also an opportunity for you if you're a cow-calf producer. This is our calving distribution as a group across the whole country. Most of our calves are born in a three-month period in the spring. So people only eat beef in June, don't they? Now, you know, if we all listen and get a 30-day calving season in the spring, there's going to be other premiums, isn't it? There are already other premiums for cattle that finish at other times. Okay? So this market's always evolving and always offering new opportunities, but we got to get from this right here, which is all these calves born in just a few months' time, in spite of the fact that a lot of guys are running the bull year-round. And then the next slide will show you what we've got to do in a feedlot. That looks like a lot of difference in placements and cattle sold out of the feed yard, but actually on a monthly basis, it only varies between like what, 1.7 million and 2 million. So we got to have a steady supply of cattle coming into a feed yard and a steady supply going out. And here's where your backgrounding type programs, your stocker operations, keeping some of your calves on grass and doing other things become more important. Because here's what I think. It's going to be pretty easy to fill a natural market out of the upper plains for a little while, or any of the premium market we're going to do during certain months. But where are we going to get the calves to feed to fit CAB in other months or to fit a natural program in other months? We can't go to the northern plains and do it in those big herds. We've got to figure out how to do that with the guys that's got 35 head in West Virginia and 50 head in Pennsylvania and that sort of thing. Because there's not a supply of cattle on a year-round basis from our large herds, which tend to be long winter spring calving herds. Next slide. But this is where I live. That is your calf. Okay? And I know we don't like to go back to my slide. I don't want to look at that a while. That's your calf. These things die. And the ones that die are oftentimes a blessing compared to them that live and continue to eat feed and end up with a heavy or light carcass discount or something else that kills us. Okay? And I know we all sit here and think that's not my calf. But, you know, I take this back to my earlier analogy about your children. If you kind of kept your children at home and protected them from everything in the world, you didn't send them to school, you didn't send them to the doctor, you didn't send them to church, you didn't let them open a checking account, didn't teach them how much car insurance was, and let them buy a set of tires so they wouldn't spin them off. That's my story. And you turn them loose on the world when they was 18 years old, what would happen to them? Would some of them die? Would some of them fail? And that's just exactly what we do with our calves. And so we say, well, my calves are fine at home. They don't get sick. All the problems after they leave here. Well, guess what? That's just the world. There is a lot of disease out there, and there is toughness in transporting them, and there is a marketing system that takes a day or two to get through. But that is the world your calves are going to face. And when you raise them, it's your responsibility to do something to prepare them for it. Next slide. It's not all about just giving a vaccine either. We're dealing with multifactorial complexes. You know, that's the biggest word I'm going to use this week. But basically what we got is my grandfather would say something was a straw that broke the camel's back. What'd he mean? It was a little bitty thing, but it was combined with a bunch of other things that finally broke that camel's back, that finally made us have a problem. So we're talking about nutrition and management and genetics and the way we handle our cattle, things we can't control like environment and weather. And what these programs are about, it's about catching value in calves. It's about keeping calves from suffering, okay? But what it's really not about silver bullets or here's a magic program or here's what Texas A&M said. What these programs are about is looking for straws and taking them away. It's really pretty simple. You see something, it's small, it don't matter, and it don't matter by itself. But when you add it with 20 other things that don't matter, it does. Next slide. Are we making progress? Not really. This is our feedlot mortalities, and the percent of those that are caused by bovine respiratory disease or shipping fever, which is the big one. This is USDA data, and over the period they examined, which was in the late 90s, those were actually trending up. Next slide. We start looking at the reason the guy that buys the calves doesn't want to pay more for them. This is Iowa State's kind of carcass futurity, ranch to rail type data. And so this is a 10-year summary. I want you to look at the unpredictability of these cattle. When we look at the pens of those cattle, some pens, that's morbidity range, the first red era, they treated none. Some pens, they treated 60%. If I looked at how many of those I treated I had to retreat, sometimes it was none, and sometimes 81% of what I retreated had to retreat. And I look at what percent of those I treated died, sometimes none of them died even though I had to treat them, and sometimes 22% of what I treated died. Now, if I'm looking at four and maybe higher dollar corn and trying to figure out what to buy to put in there, how do I predict what these cattle are going to do when I have that type of range? Now, this is going to go back and reinforce my other point. Just throwing a set of vaccines and a quota program on cattle out the window of a truck doing 70 miles an hour don't fix this deal. We're still treating 21% of these cattle for respiratory disease. And David told you earlier that in home-raised calves, he'd consider that a wreck. The guys I work with don't consider it a wreck, but they don't get premiums for them either, do they? I got a couple of my order buyer guys in here. You sell these to one of those wheat pasture guys or to a farmer feeder in Iowa, and he treats 21% and loses three or four, he don't come back. These cattle have a program on them. But it's just a program that said give a couple of doses of vaccine and deworm them and wean them before you send them. All those other little pieces it takes to make these things work are not there. Next slide. David showed you the ranch-to-rail data. It's very similar. Over a 10-year period, 23% of the ranch-to-rail cattle had to be treated. These guys gave, most of them, they're supposed to, wean them and give a vaccine before they ship them. Again, not really anything to write home about. Next slide. Here's the bigger part of that equation, though. Those calves that got sick were worth about $100 less, which moved us from profit to loss on those cattle over that 10-year average. I think the average here is $87. I don't have the data from the last several years in there. It isn't getting any lower. It's getting bigger. Go to the next slide. The other thing about this is a lot of us measure the cost of health just in medicine and death loss. You can say, well, 2% died and they were worth $500, so that's $10 a head. And I spent $1,000 on medicine on 100 head, that's $10 a head. So health cost me $20 a head. You're missing it. Half of the cost in these studies was in carcass quality and performance, and they can't measure feed efficiency in these studies because they're all eating out of the same trough. So we're at $100 and we hadn't got to our feed efficiency equation. Go to the next slide. Here's another little study out of Iowa done with CAB along with Iowa State. That CAB acceptance rate, that's the percent of the steers in there that met that high choice, high medium choice or whatever it is to make CIB. These were all black steers that were qualified to do CAB. As I went from not treating them to giving them a couple of treatments, I dropped my CAB acceptance rate from 27 to 19%. And CAB's having trouble finding enough cattle to buy. That's huge on the what kind of money you're going to get on a pen of cattle. Next slide. So here's what you're saying. My calves are healthy. Oh, I had a foot rot or two, but I've never had any pneumonia in my herd. It's somebody else's problem. And I ain't really surprised that my neighbor's calves get sick because of that sorry hay feast. Okay? This is eye disease. It's somebody else's problem. Here's what happens in your herd. I'm going to give you the reality of what happens in your herd and why your cattle don't get sick and it ain't your program. Go to the next one. If I survey cattle coming into a stockyard or coming into a feedlot and I take my swabs and I pull my titers and I do all these things, what I'm going to find is every disease known to cattle is pretty prevalent out there and it's in a lot of herds. And there's no herds that don't have an important disease or two in them. We've either got some type of reservoir or it lives there. Go to the next one. So what happens in your herd? This disease comes in from whatever reason. Blackbird flew over, deer ran through, you bought a bull. Usually these diseases by themselves without other diseases and other factors don't cause a lot of problems. Now there are exceptions. We try to eradicate them. These are economic diseases we're talking about. So it comes in and your cattle are healthy, the sun's shining, they can handle it. And so then a calf born, what do? They pass that calf colostral immunity. And while that calf is protected by that colostral immunity, it gets exposed to the disease that lives in your herd. And your calf is rock solid against that disease. So what you're going to see in a cow-calf herd is occasionally you may have a little hiccup, but you're going to go long periods of time without any signs of disease, and you're going to say, my program is working. If IBR came through last year and aborted 30 cows in your herd, how many is going to abort from it this year? Probably none unless you've got some additions or something. Why? Do you think vaccine's any better than a real thing? Okay. So I might be taking credit as your veterinarian for saying, you know, that stuff I mixed up for you fixed it, didn't it? We ain't got that problem this year. But in truth, IBR is a herpes virus, like a fever blister, or like chicken pox. Do you get the shingles when you're old because you catch chicken pox again? No. It's been living in your body the whole time and it comes back out. It's called recurrence. IBR, fever blister, same way. IBR the same way. So we got lots of herds out there with IBR or BVD or Pasteurella or whatever living in it. Your herds out there with IBR or BVD or Pasteurella or whatever living in it. You're thinking, my program's working, I'm no problem. It's fine as long as they're there on your place. But what happens when they go and meet somebody else's cattle that's never seen that before? Then that's when disease breaks down. Next slide. The other thing about this from a cow-calf perspective, when we go back to reproductive efficiency, two of the diseases we struggle the most with, the viral diseases in our respiratory disease and our stocker and feedlot operations are IBR and BVD. These are also the two main viral diseases that cause loss of reproductive efficiency in your cow herd. So a lot of us, I'd say maybe 10 or 15% of us, are maybe living with several percentage points fewer calves at weaning than we have to. And we're also creating a lot of problems down the road for somebody else. And it's because our problem's got a lot of compromises in it. Maybe we're not vaccinating. Maybe we're saying, well, this vaccine's okay, or I'm going to give it here because I'm working the cattle anyway. And we're compromising. What we see is a program that's working, but what's working is Mother Nature. The same way that in Europe, smallpox wasn't decimating Europe when Columbus came to America. It was stable. I'm sure a few people died here and there, like the disease always does when it's endemic in a population. But what happened to the Native Americans? 90% of them died in a 30-year period from those type diseases. So they thought that their smallpox control program was working in Europe, and it was as long as they stayed in Europe. But it didn't work when we moved the people. Go to the next one. So I'm going to give you a few slides of what I'm going to be talking to some feedlot and stocker guys about in the next week. These are guys that buy cattle, and how we need to be thinking because of the changes that are happening in the corn market more than anything else. Go to the next slide. I've got a little model that I use to explain how you find profitability with a feeder calf. And I don't have to look at but three things. I look at my input cost, I look at my production or performance, and I look at my efficiency. Because see, I can just run one calf through an operation and make $500 a head on him, and I don't mean nothing. I might be better off to run 10,000 calves and make $10 a head because that covers my overhead and my input cost. So what we're actually looking at is not just paying less for an animal or more for an animal. We're looking at how that impacts performance. So we are always trying to cut input cost, but not at the cost of performance or efficiency. And in most of these operations, efficiency is just as important as performance. If I've got empty pens or if I can buy more profitable cattle because I can handle more, that will drive my profit model. Go to the next slide. The major impacts of health on profitability, we've kind of talked about these with both speakers today. The easy ones to see are like medicine and death loss and chronics. The inefficiency ones are harder to see. The cattle don't eat as good. They don't convert as good. I can't run as many cattle. I get a disease breakdown, and I kind of have to shut my operation down until disease works itself out. I would like to buy these cattle, but I don't have the because they'll make money or they fit what I'm trying to do. But I don't have the labor to do it. I don't have enough facilities to do it. So I have to buy cattle that are not as profitable. That's inefficiency. Health is the biggest obstacle I face with trying to increase efficiency in a feeder calf operation. And then the last one's indirect cost. This is like quality of life. This is like the reason that the average feedlot cowboy don't stay anywhere very long. It's just kind of disheartening to go out there every day and look at sick cattle. And I guess the next thing about that is I've had customers tell me this before. It's like, man, I had a weekend. You know, they buy some select back cattle or they make an improvement in their health program or they're buying things. They said, you know, for the last few months, I've had a weekend. I don't know how you measure that. Next slide. What's wrong with this picture? It's a feed yard. And I don't know whose feed yard this is. I kind of stole this off the internet. What's wrong with this picture? A lot of empty pens, ain't it? That's not an efficiency model. That don't work with all that overhead. Is there more than one type of empty pen? And the answer is yes. And this is where the guy that buys your calves is operating. Some of those pens over there that's got cattle in them may not going to be making any money. It's economically empty. Some of them may be going to lose money. It's worse than empty. Okay? And so what we're trying to measure is things to do to get beyond that. Go ahead. Now here's what I'm thinking is going to change our world. This is corn. And it's gone from $2 a bushel to $4 a bushel. Does that change anything? Go to the next slide. Now this is just cash prices run last week. Our fat cattle are bringing $130 a head or so less per head. So we're paying about that much less per head for a feeder, steer, or feeder calf. So if you cow-calf guys hadn't been in the sale barn lately, unless you sell them really, really light while grass is coming, you're looking at $150 less for a calf. That's just reality. But we ain't through yet, because the corn increasing $2 a bushel on a 6.5 feed conversion will add $160 to the cost of finishing a 7-weight and $200 to the cost of finishing a 5-weight. That's a lot of money. And you start thinking about how I can work that number if I change that feed efficiency to 8.5. Go to the next one. We start looking at when a calf is profitable to feed or not. I pull this data set on feeding in Midwestern feedlots. The biggest thing that's associated with a profitable pen of cattle is how much they brought as fed cattle usually. Next is feeder price. And next is corn price and feed to gain. And I'll have you notice in this model that feed to gain is more important than is the price of corn. There's actually times in there, say you take heifers weighing from 600 to 700 pounds, it had no impact on whether those cattle were profitable or not. But feed efficiency did, as did the fed price. Go ahead. This explains, go back if you can. This model explains anywhere from 75 to 90% of why cattle are profitable or not. Go to the next one. So we look at three things that are impacting our profitability in a feed yard. The price of the cattle we sold, or stocker operation, by the way. price we got for the cattle we sold, the price we paid for what we bought, and feed. Go to the next slide. So if I give you feed, what's important to making a profit? I want to show you the impact of corn and what's changing. If feed were free, the only thing that matters is what I paid for calves and what I sold them for and if I kept them alive. It is a very simple model. What I paid for them, what I sold for, and if I still got them, if I didn't lose them. Let's go to the next slide. What if feeder cattle were free? Feed cost me something, and of course I'm going to sell the cattle for something. What matters? The only thing that matters is feed efficiency. How many pounds of that feed did it take me to get the calf from here to here? Okay? So you start looking at the dynamic that's changing in our market, which is from high calves and relatively cheap feed to cheaper calves and higher feed. The thing that's going to become more important to your buyer is feed efficiency on these cattle, how efficient they are. Okay? Would any of you like to, you know what feed costs a pound now? Go to the next slide. So how many people want me to give you a free truck for a year? You've got to run 200,000 miles on it. I'll give you the truck. You bring it back in the same shape you got it from me. Oh, and I forgot to tell you, it only gets 1 mile to the gallon. You can't run it. Diesel fuel's high, corn's high. You can't run inefficient cattle. Go right ahead. In the old market, that inefficient calf that had a poor conversion lost you $100 a head, which took the profits out of two pens. With high corn, he loses $200 a head or more, and he takes the profit out of 4 to 10 other groups because margins are tightening up on us really a lot. So you can't afford the variability. Before, I might have could have taken a gamble on, yeah, 1 out of 5 groups is going to give me a little problem, but I can live through it because a couple other groups will pay for it and 3 will be a profit. Now the penalty for inefficiency is so great that you can't afford to own the cattle. Next one. And is this real? Is this feed efficiency argument real? Absolutely. This is some data from Five Rivers. I borrowed this from them. You start looking at average daily gain. Really doesn't matter that much, but that feed efficiency equation. And these are healthy cattle. These are yearling cattle that we're only losing 1-2% on. But I noticed my feed efficiency changed about half a pound of feed per pound of gain, just in that little bit of cattle or groups with that little bit of death loss difference. My profitability changes by $50 a head. And feed efficiency is driving that, not death loss. Okay? Go to the next one. And here's where feed conversion, this is the reason I kind of want to focus on this today. I hope I got some guys in here who can maybe help us select for feed conversion. At $160 a ton corn, or $160 a ton ration, that's 8 cents per pound of feed. The little slanted lines are the worst third of the cattle entering Midwestern feed yards. This is from Dr. Robbie Pritchard on feed conversion. The black lines are the best ones on feed conversion. You may not can read this, but the worst feed converting third is converting about 9 pounds per pound of gain or worse. And the best third is down about 7.375. So let's just take 9.5 and 7.5. Feed's 8 cents per pound. That's 16 more cents per pound of gain. So if we're going to put 700 pounds on an animal, how much is that? It's a lot of money. Okay? And so, go to the next slide. I'm not going to say anything else about it. Corn's driving. The health and performance data you've seen today would strongly suggest to you, or should, that health is one of the biggest variables influencing the efficiency of our operation, be it the efficiency of the cattle, the number of cattle we can receive, what we can buy, what we can do, also our feed efficiency. And health is the easiest variable to change. I probably got some breeders in this room, and I could probably ask you, can you fix feed efficiency for me genetically? You'd say, give me 20 years. How long does it really take to fix health or to improve health? It takes putting some cattle through the chute and getting involved in a value chain that'll help you capture the value of it. Next slide. Take a pause. I'm going to show you one more set of data, and I just got this about a week ago, and this came from Dr. Max Ersic, who's now at the University of Florida. He comes from a cattle feeding family. It's probably really one of the first times that data has been analyzed to look at the influence of health properly. Okay? And so, go to the next slide. I'm not going to give you all of it because I'm not beating you to death with data. He looks through and he controls for every variable. These calves came from grass. These came from a stockyard. These calves came off wheat. You see what I'm saying? These cats came from Indiana. These came from Texas. These came from the Southeast. These came from Kansas. So he controls for all that stuff that can impact profitability, in weight, steer, sex, heifer, mixed pen, all these things. Control for all of those, and then you see the impact of each one of them on profitability. And one of the main things he was looking at was health. When he does all that and does a regression on the data, here's what his model estimates that health cost us on feed conversion, average daily gain, additional costs like medicine, and cost of gain. These cost of gains are at cheaper corn, by the way. But I can see that, like, moving from a 30% morbidity type calf to a 5% morbidity calf, my cost of gain is about $8 cheaper, or about $70 or so on a calf. Go to the next one. At cheaper corn, if I go and add $2 a bushel to corn, what did it do to cost of gain? It doubled it. So some of these cattle are going to be $200, $300, $400 behind cattle that look just like them. So I'll finish up with, can SelectVac work for you and your buyer? Or can another one of the value-added programs work for your buyer? I think so. Real quickly. Just watch me. I'm going to flip pretty quick. There's a lot of value-added programs out there, but basically what you've got to do, you've got to dip your toe in the water first and just move from average unmanaged cattle to cattle that have some management on them, and then start marketing better and better all the way up through premium programs that include source and age verification and that sort of thing. And guys, this is happening. I think at Pfizer, and I think I have with my SelectVac guy in the room, we're going to enroll 1 million calves in SelectVac this year. That doesn't sound like much, but that's 4% of the calves born in this country, beef cattle. So it's just one program. It's by far the biggest program, but from a few years ago when people were enrolling 20,000 to 1 million is a big jump, similar to the Superior data we saw earlier, where most of the cattle now are weaned, vaccinated, and have a verified program on them. Go to the next one. So some quotes from Cattle Facts. Everybody knows the value of preconditioning. The calves that are preconditioned and weaned 45 days are consistently bringing $5 to $8 per hundredweight more. And you can wean and precondition cattle, and you can spend $200 doing it, or you can spend $15 doing it. The basics of these programs is not that expensive. The other thing that's upon us now is, when verified for age and source, that can generate another $10 to $20 a head. And we're working with some Holstein calf ranches right now where it's worth $25 for them to verify source and age. Just when they come to pick up the calves, if it's got that ID in it, it's worth $25 more. If it don't, it don't. And all they got to do is keep a few records. Go to the next one. The impact of those health programs, he showed you this data the last few years, and I have 2005 and 6 as well, is staying above that $6 mark, more than the $7 to $8 mark for what premiums the calves are bringing. Next slide. Now, I want to show you a little bit of realistic expectations here. Can't get out from behind my podium. This is a study done in Colorado, very similar to one Dr. Lawman showed you earlier, where we take some CPH calves out of Kentucky, which are weaned and vaccinated 45-day calves, and then they got some Kentucky gold tag calves, which I don't think have the weaning requirement quite as strong. I don't even see those anymore. And then we take calves out of the same area, same markets, and we don't know what happened to them. Here's the sad thing about this. These calves got challenged at the next level at that feed yard. And 35% of the cattle that had a vaccine program got sick, but only 1% of them died. So it's kind of like you getting a flu shot sometimes. You put enough of a challenge on them, sometimes they're going to get sick for a day or two, but they're going to respond, their body's going to respond, they're going to get over it, they're going to respond to treatment. This is a wreck with value-added calves, but it is a wreck. But look what happened to the other cattle. We treated nearly 80% of those, and 11.4% of them died. They're 5 times more likely to die when they got sick. Let's go to the next slide. But here's the other thing. We actually have the performance data on these cattle. And so we know how much money they made over the premium that was paid for them, and the CPH calves did bring a premium. And what you'll notice there is the CPH calves made $242. The unknown history cattle made $120. You can only explain $50 of that with death loss. Deads, you can see, if somebody comes and picks them up, $75 of it's in performance that we can't see. Next slide. And then the latest study that we've done is very similar, going to Joplin Stockyards, which it's kind of a really success story in working with us and working with their producers and working with their buyers on developing value-added chains and cattle. Am I about out of time? Is that my signal? I can be done right now. We take calves, we buy same sale, same week, program calves versus non-program calves. Next slide. We're treating 32% versus 7%. Next slide. We start looking at these calves. We actually paid $30 more per head of these calves, that $8 premium we talked about, but at the end they made $19 more. The calves were worth $50 more a head, and it was shared pretty fairly between the guy that produced the calf and the guy that bought it. Go to the next slide. So, you know, just some of the comments that we're getting about the Select Back and about the other value-added programs is, you know, 10 years ago there wasn't much of this going on. And it takes some time to build these value chains. It takes some time to work with the cow-calf producers to get enough calves together to produce a sale or a feeder calf marketing group. But in the end, it's worth it. Go ahead. This is my last slide, even though they're flashing the lights. The automobile put horse out of business, didn't it? Well, I'm not real sure the automobile is not going to put cattle out of business. All of our farms still have cattle on it. Why? Because we produce a lot of forage on any land, and the only way we can get rid of it and get money for it is through cattle. What are we going to do when we're making ethanol out of that? You ever thought about that? What are we going to do when any kind of forage you can put together is worth $100 a ton to make ethanol out of? There's changes in store for our industry and need to be thinking about them because they're pretty profound. And with that, I'm done. Okay? Flip the slide. I'm done. Getting to you a value chain, and I think we got the other Dr. Lawman here, and we'll be glad to take some questions.
I did not leave. I may run him off.
No questions? The question was, with all the talk about BVD and the known impact of it, is that going to be part of the testing that is going to be required by some purchasers or some feedlots? Absolutely, it happens now. Do I think it will become an industry-wide deal? No. There's some people that obviously see a real value in it and others that don't. But, I mean, that's the thing about it. If you just go out and test your cattle, you don't get any extra value. You have to find some amount of other in it to pay for it. So, go ahead. You know, and that question was addressed in the previous producer, not without getting weight gain too. You know, obviously if you keep that calf at home for 45 days, and we have a lot of producers doing this that are getting 2.5 pounds per day gain on them without making them fleshy, so they're not getting a discount. So that's over 100 pounds, and they're doing that for a feed cost of somewhere around maybe 40 cents per pound to gain. So they make money on their gain, and then they get their premium as well. They're putting anywhere from $40 to $100 extra profit in their pocket. But this is not simple, because if you could market your – if you – last fall, what happened to you is the market got you, didn't it? You could have sold them earlier in the year, and so you waited and you kept them 45 days, and the market went down on you. So you've got to take all of these things into consideration in designing a program that'll work in your operation.
Involved, and the less you do for help, the more of a help discount you're going to have on your cattle.
And if you mark them in a way where they're going to be sold on the averages, that's all you're going to do. And if you want to be part of something that does something bigger, you're going to have to do something. It may not be winning at home. It may be two rounds of vaccine before winning and buying the value chain that will pay you for that. And that's really all this presentation is about. It's not about buying and leading. It's not about who's going to mark the cattle in. It's about trying to establish a way to find out what value your calves have and at least share it with them.
Give a nice round of applause.